everyone, and welcome to the Keep or Cut podcast. I'm your host today, Pete Ball, joined by Chad Young. We think this is episode 156. Chad, you named the video 156, maybe. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I couldn't remember, but the last jersey number we looked at was 55, so I think this must be 56.
You know what? That is right. I just Googled us, which is exciting. And yes, this is episode 156. So I guess it's time. Why don't we just jump right into jersey number 56?
Okay.
It's definitely
a jersey number.
It's a slam dunk. It's an easy one, right? Are you seeing what I'm seeing here?
I mean, I'm seeing that, like, there are a grand total of two people in the history of the game who accrued more than 20 WAR and wore the number 56 for more than five seasons. So I guess it's got to be Mark Burley, although Jared Washburn also had some good years. And honestly, it's funny because, like, Washburn wore it, looks like, for 12 years, Burley for 16. And Burley was obviously a better major league player, but when I think about it for fantasy purposes, the gap in WAR for them is 59.1 for Burley to 28.2 for Washburn, right? It's like a totally different category of player. But for fantasy purposes, Burley was always so blah that, like, Washburn doesn't feel like he should be that far behind. But yeah, if it's not one of those two, then it's Darren O'Day or Brian McCray or Cole Calhoun. I'm looking to see if maybe there's, like, a young player that we could be like, oh, eventually this guy will overtake those people. But, like, nope.
Yeah.
Not at all.
No. I've got a young-ish player for you. Well, he's not. I mean, it's Randy Arozarena. Randy Arozarena is a fantasy-relevant player who wore it for 4 years with Tampa Bay and wore it last year for the Mariners. So, I don't know. I feel like White Sox fans need something, and they're going to be so relieved. They may trade away Garrett Crochet. They may trade away Luis Robert. But at least episode 156 of the Keeper Cut podcast was dedicated to their team's former ace, Mark Burley.
Sure. I don't know what else to do with this number. So, yeah, so that's totally fine.
Well, folks, today's episode, other than being very ho-hum about the jersey dedication, is going to be focused on MLB free agency. We are recording the morning of December 8th. As a Red Sox fan, it's very stressful. It's beginning to look like, I don't know why I feel this way, but Juan Soto's slipping away. I think he's either going back to the Yankees or going to the Mets. I think we're going to be a third-place finisher at best in this race, but we'll see. We'll see. I don't know how much time we're actually going to spend on Juan Soto because, you know, wherever he goes, he's going to be a super stud for the next 15 years. So we can get to Juan Soto. We'll see. We're going to kind of improv, though, and talk about free agency. And I bring up Juan Soto because, again, it is December 8th. So go ahead.
Let me ask you a question about Soto real quick, because you're talking about it being stressful. You feel like he's slipping away. Did you ever think he was coming to Boston?
No, I always viewed the Mets as the favorite, but we really, I mean, you can't say the Red Sox aren't serious if they're still in this race and they're offering $700 million. So,
yeah.
And, like, we had David Ortiz vying for him, and there were all these reports, specifically reports out of the Dominican Republic, which have been from a few reporters that have gotten things wrong in the past. One of them, his name's escaping me, reported that Bogarts was coming back to Boston, for example, and obviously that didn't work out. But there was, like, enough smoke where it was like, okay, clearly the Dominican stuff matters to Soto. The history, I mean, Pedro still works for the organization. He did grow up loving the Red Sox because of that. And if they were competitive, I thought there was a chance. But did I think that he was coming here? No, I think any fan base that thinks for sure he's coming to their team is foolish, because this has been pretty airtight so far.
Yeah. You're more optimistic than I realized on him. So when you were like, to me, when you were like, oh, it's getting stressful, I was like, why? He was like, I even with all the, like, the Ortiz stuff, I don't know. I never really thought Boston was realistic. I
why is that?
Guessed. Because I thought there were three teams that were more likely. And then
the
Boston
three?
Was in the New York teams and the Dodgers.
Oh, okay. So the Dodgers, I mean, I have felt like the lurking team now.
Yeah.
That, like, could strike, but I don't know. I feel like if he was going to be a Dodger, he already would have signed because they would have offered him $1 billion and, you know, $900 million would have been deferred until 2063 and he would have signed already.
Yeah.
Toronto is the team. Maybe. I kind of feel bad for. Like, as a Red Sox fan, even if he doesn't sign here, I'm trying to take it as a half of a win because we're in on a player for $700 million. Like, where did that come from?
Yeah.
That's nice to see. But the Blue Jays, like, oof, that's going to be tough. Like, at what point are they just the kind of like the Giants, which we can jump to in a second with Willy Adames, of the American League, where it's like, it doesn't matter how much money they offer. It just seems like players don't want to go there.
I just don't know that we've got, like, the Giants have been in, like, a weird situation. We can talk about them in a minute, but, like, the Jays, I don't know. They seem to be the other team in the Ohtani situation, but I think that was mostly Ohtani's team using somebody to drive up the bidding and figure out what the market price was. Like, in retrospect, it certainly feels like Ohtani was just determining how much to make the Dodgers pay him. Like, that's what his free agency was about. It wasn't about finding a team. And I don't know that I've seen any clear evidence that they're going to be the high bidder on Soto anyways. So I know some Toronto fans who are frustrated, but I think this is just a case of them, like, I don't know. I don't see any, like, super clear evidence that this is teams, players being like, I don't want to play there. But because, I mean, if you think about it, especially a couple years ago, like, maybe the shine's come off a bit, but there was a point in time there where you had, like, young Bichette, you had Vlad. Like, there was a fun young team being built there. I don't know why somebody wouldn't want to go be part of that, other than maybe they don't want to play in Canada. Like, maybe there's a tax implication that's a real issue that changes the value of their contracts. That could be, I guess. But I don't know. I think this is just a case of, like, they were, I think at some level lied to about Ohtani, and they've been on the periphery of Soto, but they've, like, it doesn't feel like Soto's turning them down. He met with them. He talked to them. There were better offers. That's my read on this one.
That certainly could be the case. You know, it depends on, like, what time period of this whole Soto saga you're looking at, but there was a time period where it was like, Toronto is going to be right there with all of these teams over $700 million. They're going to try and match whatever the Mets offer and all that stuff. So you're right. It might not be that players don't want to go there. It's just more, it's that always the bridesmaid, never the bride situation.
Yeah.
And I think that's why a team like the Giants have to, I guess, overpay, right, for a player like Willy Adames. Now, this podcast is a big fan of Willy Adames, particularly from a fantasy perspective, and that paid dividends last year where he had a career season. So I am, however, not excited about Willy Adames going to the Giants. I can't imagine most folks are. I think it's going to take a hit on his power. I think that's for sure. And I also worry about the speed component, where last year, career high 21 stolen bases. He was a fast athletic player, but he's never really been a stolen base guy. In the Giants last season, it's always tough to look at things like this. It could be a personnel thing, or it could just be a philosophy thing, which would be a concern, where they don't really steal bases. So am I going to expect 20 stolen bases again from Willy Adames next year? I don't think so. Their second leading guy in steals was Matt Chapman with 15. So you could look at that one of two ways. You could say, well, Matt Chapman stole 15 bases for the Giants. At the same time, that was the second most in the team. And then third, I think, was in the single digits. So I don't know. Tyler Fitzgerald, you know, they called him up and he ran like crazy. I just wouldn't expect much speed from Willy Adames next season. It's not something he's done for his career. Last year looks like an outlier, and now he's going to an organization that might run a little bit less. So I'm kind of expecting a downtick across the board from Adames. But I also kind of expected that anyway, right? Like, we were going to pay for him. It was going to be paying for a career season. So I don't know, Chad, you're a Willy Adames guy like me. Are you disappointed or indifferent? Because I doubt you're excited about the move to San Francisco.
Yeah. No, I'm not excited. I think, take a quick note on the speed front. I think, like, they just don't have anyone who can run. Like, if you look at their roster, And so the fact that Fitzgerald stole 17 bases in half a season as the only guy with speed on that roster, and that Chapman stole 15 bases in a full season despite not having that much speed, I don't read any of this as a philosophical issue with running. It looks to me like it's a personnel thing. And so I'm not super worried about the stolen bases. I think that'll be fine. I think that
I'm interested to see what else. Like, give us a range. How many stolen bases are you expecting Willy Adames to steal next year? Because for me, I'm at like the 8 to 12 range. I just feel like the 21's an outlier.
Yeah, I think the 21 is and was an outlier. I mean, look, he's got he has 51 career stolen bases, and that's 21 of those were last year. He has never stolen more than 8 in a season other than that. Right? I mean, you go 6, 4, 2, 5, 8, 5, 21. So anybody who was like, yeah, he's going to steal 20 bags. Like, I don't know. He could have gone to the most run happy team of like the 1920s and they still wouldn't have stolen 20 bags. Cause it's just, it's not what he does. But
he also hasn't really been an efficient base stealer throughout his career either, for what that's worth.
No, 22 times caught. Now, he was more efficient last year. 21 mm-hmm. stolen bases, 4 caught stealing. So here's what I'll say. I wouldn't expect more than 10. I think that he's going to be single digits probably, but probably high single digits. I think there is a chance that what we saw last year was him improving his ability to read pitchers or something like that. And that's why he got so much more efficient, because again, that stands out, how efficient he was last year versus previous years. And if that's the case, he might run more, not more than last year, but more than we're expecting. So like, I think 13 to 15 is very much in play, but I would be banking on 8, 9, something like that.
Yeah.
Overall, I commented yesterday in the Auto News Slack community when people were talking about this, people were talking about how much they like this for the Giants and how much they dislike it for fantasy. And where I sort of netted out was like, I commented that I think that it brings down my expectations for his WOBA, but not for his WRC plus, right? Because WOBA is not park adjusted. WRC plus is, which is to say, I think the Giants are going to get the guy they're going for. I just think that the surface numbers are not going to look as good because it's a worse park to hit in. It was pointed out on the, you know, Baseball Savant has that expected home run number. It was only a few less last year, like 3 or 4 less than he had 35 last year, right? He had a huge season. Or 32. He had 32 last season. And I think it was like, oh, let me double check this.
I think it was 31 if it was San Francisco.
Yeah. Okay, right. He only lost one. So, he's a powerful enough hitter to overcome the downsides of that park. I think what you should expect are fewer home runs. But to be honest, like, his last 4 years, 25, 31, 24, 32. So what were your realistic expectations for the next year? Probably 25 to 27. Like, you weren't really expecting 30 again. And I don't think there's any reason he can't hit 25-ish again. So I think you go from expecting 25 to 30, 25 to 27 with, 35 upside to like 22 to 24 with 30 upside. It just doesn't move the needle a ton. It moves the needle a little bit. And I think you'll get a similar overall line, just the home runs are going to come down. And so I think the biggest thing with Adames is the home runs were always going to come down. Like, he had a career high in home runs last year. He had a career high in doubles last year. He had a career high in stolen bases last year. Like, he just wasn't going to do that again. So my expectations were already down versus last year, but I'm still a Willy Adames fan, and I will still be happy to have him on rosters.
Yeah, no, that's good analysis. I agree. I mean, on one hand, I also think the Giants might not be done, right? Buster Posey is now in that decision maker's chair, which is exciting. I heard him on Baseball Tonight, Buster Posey's Buster Olney's podcast. He had Buster Posey on a couple weeks ago, and I was listening to Posey talk, and he was talking about how like they like their hitting, but they need pitching. And so like, I don't know if he was just like playing a role there. And I was surprised to see they just went out and got Willy Adames. At the same time, I wasn't all that surprised because if we're being honest, they need a lot of hitting. And on top of that, they've been thirsty for a big contract like this for a while. But if they're not done and they add another piece to help Adames in the middle of that lineup, I could see a similar season to last year. But like you said, the counting numbers be down a little bit. And I think the stolen bases are going to go down a whole lot. One thing to keep in mind, Jung-Hoo Lee, if he's healthy this year, he could be a nice OBP presence at the top of that lineup that could help Adames get closer to that RBI total. You know, he's kind of a player who's been forgotten about, but because he missed so much of last season, and otherwise we haven't seen him play, he could be interesting at the top of that lineup.
Yeah, it's not a bad lineup, and like you said, there is room for them to potentially add one more piece, and but the top of that lineup, I mean, especially if you believe in what Tyler Fitzgerald was doing. Lee, Fitzgerald, Wade, Adames, Chapman, Yastrzemski, Ramos. You know, you get Patrick Bailey, and they've got to figure out what they're doing in left field, because I don't think Grant McRae is all that exciting. It's not a bad lineup, and I think I could easily see them being in the market for another bat. And I think, like, and I'm looking at who's out there, and it's not totally clear to me which bat that would be. Because like, they're obviously not gonna, it's not gonna be a middle infielder. I don't think it'd have to be a corner outfielder or a first baseman. I think those are the two spots, but like, I think they like Lamont Wade. So unless they think he can move back to the outfield, maybe it is just a corner outfielder. And then, I don't know, could they be in on a, like, Anthony Santander? Someone like that? And that's another big boost in the lineup. So, like, it'll be very interesting to see if they're done, because I don't know that they are. Like, you mentioned at the beginning, this was, you know, felt like a little bit of an overpay on Adames. The fan, you know, Fangraphs does that crowdsourcing thing every year for crowdsourcing a contract, and the median years and dollars for Adames was 6 years, $150 million, which is a $25 million AAV. He got a $26 million average year. It's just over 7 years instead of six. So like, they gave him an extra year is basically all they did. I don't know. I'm not sure that they're necessarily done here. So,
and I don't think they should be, because, you know, you said at the top there that it's not a bad offense. And it's not, but it's definitely not a, it's far from a great one. They still have work to do in San Francisco. So Adames is a very fantasy relevant player in keeper leagues, in redraft leagues. So I do want to bring this back to fantasy, you know, from a keeper's perspective. I'm kind of with Chad. I don't think it changes too much. Maybe he's a little bit devalued, but Chad, I'm going to read you the top nine in shortstop ADP. Willy Adames is 10th. And then, like, to me, there's such a drop off after 10 that, like, this has not moved Adames most likely in my rankings at all. So the top nine: Bobby Witt Jr., Ellie De La Cruz, Gunnar Henderson, Mookie Betts, Francisco Lindor, Trey Turner. Now, we can all agree those six are going to be ahead of Adames. After that, we have O'Neill Cruz, Corey Seager, CJ Abrams. I wouldn't be surprised if you have Adames over CJ Abrams. You know, I like Abrams. The other two, Cruz and Seager, I'm fine with those being above Adames. And then you have Adames. After that, it's Matt McClain, Ezekiel Tovar, Zach Neto, Anthony Volpe. Like, are you dropping Adames below any of those guys?
No, definitely not. I think the question for me, I think, is less, am I dropping Adames below those guys, and more, am I dropping Adames below an outfielder or a corner infielder or a pitcher that I might take at a similar part of the draft, because I feel more comfortable. Like, if my choice comes down to Adames or waiting on Neto, for example, that gap may have shrunk a little bit, which might be enough that I'm like, eh, I'll take an outfielder there instead and wait on the shortstop.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think I'm in the same spot, but we still like Willy Adames, and good for you, yeah. Giants fans. We're going to get to some Max Fried stuff in a second, but we're going to take a quick break. Welcome back, folks. Keep or Cut podcast, just kind of improv free agent discussion, keeper implications, all that stuff. Chad, I'm going to read you a tweet that I saw this morning that it's not from Bob Nightingale. So, you know, it's a report of something that Bob Nightingale said, and I'm trying to find it and I can't. I'll just give it to you and then I'll find it after so I can cite it. But somebody tweeted, somebody I follow in my Red Sox rumors list on Twitter, that Bob Nightingale reported that Max Fried is going to either the Yankees or the Red Sox on a deal that is going to exceed $200 million. Now, I don't care about the money. I just want the Red Sox to get pitchers. They desperately need pitchers. But I don't want this to turn into a discussion about Red Sox, Yankees. I think from a fantasy perspective, I actually think I would rather see him go to the Yankees. I think a lefty in New York being tough, like the Yankees should stack left-handed starting pitchers. I think that'd be a decent, despite the ballpark, despite the division, all that stuff, I actually think that could be a pretty nice fantasy landing spot for Max Fried. Do you buy that report? And I'll be able to cite it for you in just a second. Is there a better spot for Max Fried that's realistic that you think he could end up at? Where are we at with the Max Fried free agency?
I mean, if we're looking at those two, I do think it's, you know, people talk about Yankee Stadium being such a, you know, there's the short porch and it's such a great hitter's park and all this stuff. Like the park factor on Savant for Yankee Stadium overall is 100. Just nice, even 100. It actually has a, like the park factor for Fenway is 107. So it's a Yankee Stadium is overall a slightly better pitcher's park than Fenway is. Now it is a, you know, Yankee Stadium is a much better power park than Fenway. But as you noted, a lot of that has to do with lefties. And if we look at it from a righties perspective, which is maybe the more relevant side for Fried, it's, well, interestingly, Yankee Stadium has a 120 park factor for homers for righties and a 109 for lefties. So I don't really understand that one. That seems wrong to me. But
that's upsetting.
So maybe I've got this, maybe I'm confused by this, maybe I'm wrong, but I guess what I'm getting at is I don't think that Yankee Stadium is such a terrible landing spot for a left-handed pitcher that I'm like panicked about it. And I don't think that, I mean, at some level, it's like if the Yankees re-sign Soto, then facing the Red Sox, as much as I like the Red Sox lineup, facing the Red Sox 15 times a year instead of facing the Yankees 15 times a year feels like a slight upgrade just because Judge and Soto are so ridiculous.
And you know they'll do more. So, they're not just going to go into the season with just those two again. They can't do it.
You'd think so, but that's what, like, these aren't the Yankees that we were. They're not the Dodgers, right? Like,
you're right. They,
it's been a while, so I don't really know what to expect. But yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all if the Yankees offense is better than the Red Sox offense, or at least more scary to an you know, opposing starting pitcher. And so I think that could be a difference. I think overall as a fantasy player, I'm just not sure I care super deeply which of these teams he goes to. I will note that Truist Park, where he's been pitching, has the third highest strikeout park factor. And so he's going to be taking a downgrade in his strikeout park factor, but I'm not really sure how much that matters. Yankee Stadium is a better strikeout park than Fenway. So maybe that's, oh no, it's not. Sorry, my mistake. Fenway is a better strikeout, but they're very similar. I don't know. I think what this all comes down to is, like, every time I look at these numbers, I they're very similar situations. Yankee Stadium is maybe a slightly better place to pitch, as crazy as that seems. And so I guess I'd be happier to go to the Yankees, but like the reality is where I have Freed, I don't want him to go to either of those places. Like I want him going somewhere else.
Yeah. From or a fantasy anywhere perspective. Else. Yeah. We'd much rather like go to Kansas City, man. Then we're really talking. So to cap the Freed talk, I'll give you three pitchers. It's the starting pitcher who's currently going ahead of him, the starting pitcher that's immediately going after him. Rank these three for me: Spencer Schwellenbach, Max Fried, Grayson Rodriguez.
Boy,
I know you're a big Schwellenbach guy.
Yeah, but I'm not. I don't know.
It's a little surprising to see Fried there.
Yeah, it's such a weird combination of players because you have like I said, I'm a big Schwellenbach fan, but he's very unproven. I'm a big Grayson Rodriguez fan, but he's
all over the
hasn't
place.
Proven to be elite yet. Mm-hmm. And I mean, man, I know last year wasn't as good for Fried, but this is a guy who like dating back to 2018 has had 1, 2, 3, 4 seasons of an ERA under 3 and another one at 3.04. Last year was sort of a down year for him with a 3.25 ERA. Now his exa ERA and FIP were also up a little bit, but like, I don't know. I think Fried is still first on that list for me. I'm trying to decide if like for keeper leagues, the age difference matters.
Fried is 30. He'll turn 31 in January. Right.
Yeah. I mean, like Grayson Rodriguez for all the strikeouts, like he wasn't as good as Fried last year. Schwellenbach, as much as I liked him, he wasn't as good as Fried last year. He was very close. You know, I would say this in redraft, it's Fried first, and then I could see going either way. In keeper leagues, it might be Fried last just based on the upside and long term potential for the other two. And between those two, I think it has to be Schwellenbach over Rodriguez, which seems, I don't know, it feels reactive somehow. Like Grayson Rodriguez was supposed to be this like incredible ace, and that upside certainly still exists. And like, I don't know, Schwellenbach will turn 25 in May. Grayson Rodriguez just turned 25. They're like 6 months apart. It's not an age thing. But Rodriguez just hasn't been as good in his major league time as Schwellenbach has. And yes, it's only 238 innings for Rodriguez, and it's only 123 for Schwellenbach. But Schwellenbach's been better. And so I think right now, if I have to take a bet on one of those two, I'll take the bet on the guy who's performed better. But boy, is it a tough call. But yeah, I think redraft, I would go Fried, and I think he might be last of the three in a keeper league. Just because you're drafting, I mean, you said these guys are going in order as starting pitchers. Where are they in the starting pitcher ADP?
Yeah, they're very close. So Schwellenbach is 40th, but this is just filtered for pitchers. So there's relievers ahead of them too. But Schwellenbach is 40th. More importantly, his ADP is 100.7. And Fried's is 101.2. So they are neck and neck. And Grayson Rodriguez is 101.6. So, I mean, these three guys are as close as they could possibly be.
I guess I think in, it's a little bit of a cop-out answer, but it would depend a lot to me on what you did in those first 7-8 rounds of the draft. Because at that point in the draft, you could have 2 or 3 starting pitchers lined up and feel really good about your pitching. And then in a keeper league, I want to play the upside game there with Rodriguez or Schwellenbach. But if you need pitching help, like if you're like, I've waited on pitching. I need a reliable guy I can plug in and feel good about, then Fried is probably the pick. And the other thing is, with that draft cost on these guys, like Schwellenbach and Rodriguez and Fried, honestly, all of them, could have good years and not be super exciting keepers at an eighth, seventh round price, whatever it is at that point, eighth or ninth, I guess. So I've sort of come back around to the idea that, like, if you need pitching, Fried is the guy. He's going to be the most reliable, I think, in terms of a guy you can just like plug him into your lineup, feel good about it, not have to worry about as much risk. But if you've got good pitching and you want to go for upside, I think the other two have more upside.
Yep, that makes sense to me. I think for me, I'd have the same redraft ranking. I would also, it's just a preference thing, in a keeper league, have Fried first of the three as well. It just feels like with pitchers, it's almost like age is out the window. It can go for these guys at any moment. And Fried, three of the last four seasons, has pitched at least 165 innings, pitched basically like a really good number two in fantasy. So I'm still holding on to Fried there, but I totally get the age component. We'll see where he signs. That could impact this a little bit, but probably like Willy Adames, not that much. Chad, speaking of pitchers, your Guardians brought back Shane Bieber, which I thought makes a lot of sense. There are reports that some teams are heavily in on him. I know my Red Sox are apparently offering even more money, but like when your guy rehabbing a serious surgery, I think it's good to stay in the same system with the same doctors. Everything that you are used to doing on your rehab, you get to keep doing. And when he has to prove himself for his next contract, at least he won't be learning a whole new team, a whole new ballpark. He'll be able to be most comfortable to set himself up to make more money in the future. I also didn't think, at least for the Reds, I didn't think it was a good fit. You need pitching right now. This guy might not be back until the All-Star break or whatever it is. So, like, what would the point of that be? Are you happy about the signing? Do you expect the Guardians to come at him with a long-term offer after he comes back? Where are we at with 2025 Shane Bieber and then long-term Shane Bieber?
Yeah, I do expect him to come back. I think I don't know that we'll see the version of Bieber that we got so briefly this year, right? And I think there have been a lot of Guardians fans I've seen who are like, he clearly had like turned a corner and gotten back to being just like a Cy Young level pitcher. I mean, he made two starts in 2024. He threw 12 total innings. He struck out 20 and walked one in those 12 innings. He was legitimately as brilliant can be. His FIP over those two starts was 0.08. I don't think that he is that. I do think he's probably closer to his 2022 than his 2023. Not in terms of the innings, but in terms of the performance and ERA and the, you know, his ERA that year and his FIP, XFIP were all sub three. I don't think he's necessarily going to be all the way back to that, but like low three ERA, decent strikeout numbers. Like, I think that's what we'll see. As long as the velocity is solid. I like this signing for the team. I like this signing for the player. I think we're like, you know, you could tell from some of the stuff Bieber was saying right after the injury that like he wanted to be back. And I think part of that was just, I want to rehab with the people who helped develop me, who know what my pitching style is, who helped me rebound from a little bit of a down year in 2023. Like there were a lot of reasons why it made a lot of sense for Bieber to want to be back. The Guardians need pitching too. My concern for the Guardians right now is like, this can't be it with the pitching. Their pitching is suspect at the moment. And as you mentioned, when you're talking about Bieber as a Red Sox target, like he's not gonna be back till the All-Star break or midseason or whatever it is. And so I like this as long as the Guardians do something else from an MLB perspective. From a fantasy perspective, I think this is the best case scenario. And part of that is that I trust the Guardians to work with him. Part of it is also, someone cited this research the other day, and I have to go try to track it down, but there was someone who had pointed out that free agents who re-sign with their current teams perform better on average than free agents who leave. And especially in the case of an injury like this, there's part of me that thinks like nobody knows his medicals and his work habits and his the way he's going to recover better than the Guardians. So if the Guardians, now that's not to say that the Guardians been in on him and the Mets had just been like, you know, here's Steve Cohen money, whatever money you want, just tell us. And he was like, look, I'm going to take the money. Sorry, that it would be a bad thing. That does, but like the simple fact that the Guardians were like, we've known you forever. We know exactly who you are. We know every single intimate detail of your medicals in a way that other teams just can't. And we want you back. Like, that's a good sign. So from a fantasy perspective, I really like this. I think it's a good landing spot. Do I expect them to offer him a long-term contract? I don't know. Let's wait and see how the season goes. I think it's premature to be worried about that because he still has to like rehab and come back and pitch. The short answer is yes. Like if he pitches well, they'll make him an offer. I don't think he'll take it. Right. I think, and I think in some ways, I think this injury hurt the Guardians' chances of having Bieber 4 or 5 years from now. While it helped them keep him this year, right? Like he might have left in free agency this year if he had perfectly healthy year, pitched great, he'd be getting huge contracts. But I think there'd be at least a chance that he would have taken some kind of a discount to stay in Cleveland. I think if I'm him, part of what this injury has done is remind me how fleeting this moment in life can be, right? And he may be more inclined to just see what the market can do for him.
Yeah, that makes sense from a long-term perspective too. In your keeper leagues, I'm willing to bet a lot of people, if you have Shane Bieber still, it's because you picked him up off free agency. So it's kind of just like a win-win if you're forced into keeping him for a very cheap keeper cost. You know, you just get to ride it out and see how it goes in that second half. And if he looks like Shane Bieber again, you have a hell of a keeper. If he doesn't, it's an easy cut. But yeah, good to see Bieber returning back to the Guardians. Early, we were talking about, you know, Juan Soto and, you know, and Max Fried. And like, you know, if Soto goes back to the Yankees, you know, you'd rather Fried face the Red Sox than face the Yankees. I think if Soto goes to the Red Sox, I think that flips. The Red Sox had a really good offense last year. I wouldn't want to face them with Soto. If Soto goes to the Mets, however, it's not just the Yankees that lost a huge offensive piece and didn't replace it. The Red Sox did as well. Now, I'm certainly not equating Tyler O'Neill to Juan Soto. That's silly. But Tyler O'Neill was very, very good for the Red Sox last season. We're talking like a 131 WRC plus. He was very useful. And he's going to be the replacement for Anthony Santander, which in Baltimore, he received a 3-year, it was almost $50 million contract. He has an opt-out after the first year. And this kind of surprised me, Chad. Tyler O'Neill is younger than Anthony Santander. Anthony Santander being a late bloomer, and Tyler O'Neill has just been around forever, and he's been hyped forever because of just really how jacked he is and how much power he has. He's actually a little bit younger than Anthony Santander. So I think it's a good get for the Orioles if they're looking at like, look, we're going to present Corbin Burnes with a $235 million contract, so we got to maybe let Santander go and get a cheap replacement. I think O'Neill can be a decent cheap replacement for Santander. He's brutal against righties. He was last year. The strikeout rate's way higher than Anthony Santander. He's actually a pretty good strikeout rate. But I think it's a solid replacement. We'll see how O'Neill plays with defenses coming in. It's an excellent lineup as well. So I think this could be a nice landing spot for Tyler O'Neill, who really is kind of quietly coming off of an awesome season. So I guess we can lump these two together. Santander hasn't signed yet. I imagine he, like Teoscar, they're waiting for Soto to sign so that they can become the plan B for a lot of teams. Let's start with O'Neill. How do you feel about O'Neill in Baltimore as opposed to Boston? I think it was a great lineup for him in Boston, but he's got a good one now in Baltimore.
Yeah, I think that I like that landing spot for O'Neill. I think it's not like the right-handed park factor for home runs in Oriole Park is not great, but O'Neill has he's got big power, right? This isn't just like he doesn't hit a ton of cheapies. And so I think that's good. They're also bringing the fences in this year. It won't come quite back to, you know, the Camden yards of old where everything to left field was a home run, but it should be much improved if you're Tyler O'Neill or a Tyler O'Neill fan. And as much as I like the Red Sox lineup, the Orioles lineup is better. So,
oh, for sure.
I think that's a good landing spot. I do think it's a little bit of a weird one for what it means for Santander, because I sort of thought Santander would just end up back in. I thought he would end up back in Baltimore, but now it looks like he won't. I just thought they were going to want to keep a big bat in there, which it turns out was correct. It just wasn't the big bat I expected. I think that, you know, I'm sort of curious to see, like, it's been a couple years, but O'Neill did play center field at one point, and I'm wondering if with all the corner bats they have, if they may let O'Neill try to play some center field again. Probably not in a, like, where does Cedric Mullins fit in kind of way, but in a maybe we can get squeeze some more plate appearances out of some other guys kind of way. So I like this. I think it's a good fit for Baltimore. I like it from a fantasy perspective because it gets them into a super strong lineup. It does create, yeah, it's an interesting question now of once, like I said, once Soto signs, Santander and Teoscar are both guys with real interesting fantasy profiles who, Teoscar has looked fairly park impacted over his career, depending on how much you want to read into that down year with the Mariners. And so you start to wonder where he's going to land. I do think that one of those three corner bats ends up with the Dodgers, because I think they're either going, I think part of me thinks they've already told Teoscar, like, look, we can't not go after Soto. But if he ends up in one of the New York teams, you know, let's talk. And if you're Teoscar and the Dodgers have said that to you, even if you don't intend to go back, even if you think you might sign somewhere else, you don't sign somewhere else until you could say, well, the Dodgers offered me this much. So I don't know. We'll see. I'm very curious what they do, though, because I think there's a good chance that one of those two guys ends up in the Dodgers. And I don't know. If I'm looking at O'Neill, Santander, and Teoscar from a fantasy perspective, give me the one hitting in Dodgers Stadium in the Dodgers lineup. That's the one I want.
Yeah, and as good a season as all three had, Teoscar had the best season of those three, if I'm not mistaken. So I think that kind of makes sense that we'd want Teoscar. And I do think I don't think Juan Soto's going to the Dodgers. I don't think that's happening. Yeah. And so if we're talking, now all those other teams have to go to their plan B. Nobody's going to beat the Dodgers to get Teoscar back. And I think Teoscar wants to be there too. The team I wouldn't sell short for Anthony Santander would be the Padres, who, you know, they have some holes in their lineup right now that they need to address, but they're absolutely in the thick of contention. Their stars are in their primes. They, you know, they're a good team. They just went pretty far. I think Santander would be a great fit there. That's my prediction for them. Right now, Roster Resource has Tirso Ornelas as their left fielder, or Ornelas, sorry, in Eguy Rosario at DH. So that's just a team that clearly has spots they need to fill. Santander more a DH at this point, but I think he's going to be a Padre. I think Teoscar is going to be a Dodger. Well, we'll take one more break, folks, and then we're going to continue to break down some of these free agent signings and free agent situations, I guess. We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. Keep or Cut podcast, Pete Ball, Chad Young, chatting it up about the free agents. And the ones that we've chatted about, for the most part, Chad, have been guys who have been already heavily involved in rumors or have already signed. But there's some names that like are clearly just waiting out this Juan Soto situation. And the two big ones, so MLB trade rumors, I'm sure all of our listeners have heard of this website before. I love this website so much. Their number one available free agent was Juan Soto, obviously. Number two is Corbin Burnes, and number three is Alex Bregman. And I have barely heard anything about Burnes and Bregman. So let's start with Burns. I think, again, he's waiting to be the plan B for a lot of teams that sign Juan Soto. I could easily see the Mets getting Soto and then still getting Corbin Burns. I think they have a need there, and they're obviously willing to spend. That would be a scary situation for teams that are looking for help. But I think there's a lot of teams that could be in on Burns. First of all, the three Soto contenders, the Red Sox, the Yankees, and the Mets, I think all of whoever doesn't get Soto, I think we're going to start seeing their names involved for Corbin Burns. I think the Rangers could be a dark horse for Corbin Burns. I think the Angels could be a dark horse for Corbin Burns. So there's a lot out there for Burns. I think he's going to receive a contract north of $200 million. Where do you see him going, and what do you think is kind of the best case realistic situation for him in terms of keeper leagues?
Yeah, I mean, Burns, I think that a team you didn't mention, who we've already seen spend, who, you know, you told us, Buster Posey told everyone that they like their offense, which suggests that if they have more money to spend, they might be thinking about pitching. And I would love for him to end up pitching in Oracle Park.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be.
And they lost Snell. They got big shoes to fill.
Right. So I think there's a real possibility that he goes there. I think, you know, I do think the Mets are a pretty likely landing spot for him, but it's worth noting the Mets have already signed two starting pitchers. Now, neither of them are starting pitchers of the Corbin Burns variety. But I don't know. Like, part of me thinks that they did that because they're not sure they're in on Burns or can get Burns, especially after Snell came off the market. And so I sort of look at, you know, I wonder if they're saying, like, well, we're spending our money on Soto. That means we're not spending on Burns. We still think, you know, Fried's going to be too expensive. And then you get down into, like, you know, if I'm looking at a list on Fangraphs of all the free agents sorted by their projected war for the coming season. And you got Burns and Snell as the top two pitchers, and then Fried and Kikuchi after that. And then you have Nate Eovaldi, Jack Flaherty, Nick Pivetta. If you're not, at this point, if you're the Mets and you don't think you're in on Burns, it makes some sense to be like, you know what, let's go get Clay Holmes. Let's go get Frankie Montas. We got Senga coming back. You know, I think the other name that we haven't talked about that they're likely in on is, I suspect they're trying to bring back Sean Manaea, because that worked out for them. And they maybe there may be a reason they're playing in that pool. Now, that reason might be that they want nine starting pitchers, because that's like the number of starting pitchers teams need these days. And that may have nothing to do with Burns. But what I think is a realistic landing spot for Burns would be that I'd be really excited about is San Francisco. He's been a little bit high on the home run per fly ball rate in the past, and with his strikeouts coming down five straight years now, I have at least a little concern with Burns, and if he's allowing more balls in play and he's been a little bit homer prone, like, what does that look like moving forward? Because I don't think we should expect those strikeouts to come back. Maybe they will, but that's not what I'm banking on from him. And so getting him into a less power-friendly park feels at least somewhat important to me. And that's why I look at Oracle. But, you know, Citi Field's a pretty middle-of-the-pack homer park. It's not that doesn't scare me necessarily. If I'm looking at places I don't want him to go, like, I don't really want him in Yankee Stadium. I don't want him in Dodger Stadium, although at this point I don't expect the Dodgers to be in on him.
That would break baseball. that would be so stupid.
Well, I mean, I think the funny thing with all this stuff with the Dodgers is, like, and yeah, it feels like it would break baseball, but also the playoffs are still so noisy and so many random things can happen in a short series that it's like I saw, God, who was it that was talking about this on Blue Sky the other day? that like all these people are like, oh, why even bother watching? And he's like, this isn't the NBA, right? This isn't Durant going to the Warriors and you've got like the best team just added an elite player. And so now none of this matters because there are points and times in the NBA where that's true. There's one team that is so much better than everyone else that they are a better than 50% chance to win the title just based on their talent. Because in the NBA, the best team wins a 7-game series. It's just how basketball works. That isn't true in baseball, right? So like, you know, the Dodgers, if they add Burns, in addition to everything they've already done, they go into a 3-game, you hope if you're them, you're not in the 3-game series. But in a 5-game series, they're like a 60% favorite. In 7 games, maybe that goes up to 65%. They're still like less than 50% likely to win the World Series, right? I mean,
I don't disagree. I think it's a good point. At the same time, they just went into the playoffs with like their entire rotation out besides Walker Buehler, who was like the one name that they would probably prefer to be out compared to all those other guys. And they still won the World Series. So it's going to break baseball, I mean more from like a free agency perspective, because if you sign with them, there's going to be like, you know, $20 billion deferred and who knows what else. It's just,
I think I want to see someone go somewhere else. I don't disagree, but I think the underrated value of the Dodgers doing what they're doing is that, like, based on the numbers that I have sort of roughly in my head, if they win their division and have the top seed in the NL, which seems extremely likely, they're like a 25% chance to win the World Series from the moment the playoffs start. Now, there's also a chance they don't win their division, they don't have a top seed, which would bring that all down, which means there's a 75% chance, at least, that at the end of the season, we're like, oh my God, the Dodgers spent all that money and brought in all that talent and still didn't win. How sad. And I think, like, there's that's value.
Been the case with them for a while, last year.
That's the other thing, people are like, oh, they're doing, like, they're just dominating everything. Like, they haven't been winning regularly. Like, they won in the shortened season, which is a whole other thing. And this is it, right? So, I think sports benefit from having Goliaths that can be knocked down, and baseball maybe more than any other because of the fact that those Goliaths are easier to knock down, right? It's less fun in the NBA because you're like, yeah, this team, like, you know, that Warriors team, once they added KD, they could have lost. And it would have been amazing if they did, but they weren't going to. The Dodgers, like, if they sign all these guys, yeah, they might win the World Series again this next season. They probably won't. And if they win it this year, they probably won't next year, right? Like, they're not going to win like 5 straight because they have these guys for the next 5 years. And so that's
no, that's fair. Plus, you know, the Celtics are that team, so let's just ride on all those titles.
The second place Celtics.
Oh, if you think that matters, you have a long spring ahead of you.
No, I know.
For what it's worth, MLB trade rumors, they have 4 experts predict where these players are going to go at the beginning of each free agency period. 2 for Burns went with the Mets. 2 for Burns went with the Red Sox. There's not a lot of smoke with the Red Sox. There's way more smoke with Max Fried and the Red Sox that I've read about, but we'll see where these teams shift to. So much of it depends on where Soto goes. The other name that I wanted to talk about was Alex Bregman. Now, I don't know how much the Nolan Arenado trade rumors and in all likelihood trade is impacting Bregman's market as well. I have this Boston perspective because I've been deep in the weeds the last few weeks of like, all right, if they trade Casas in a Garrett Crochet deal, then they're going to move Devers to first base and that could open up third base for Bregman. Okay, but I would rather have St. Louis pay for most of Arenado's contract to come and play for the Red Sox. Like, I think in some of these situations that could be impacting Bregman's market. Bregman's also, I mean, it's not a secret. This isn't, you know, something that's revolutionary, but he's pretty reliant on those pulled fly ball home runs. that he's experienced in Houston with the Crawford boxes. So if he does leave Houston, and the comments are like, yeah, we want Bregman back, but we also, you know, got to do what's best for the team. I mean, I'm putting words in their mouth, but that's basically what the messaging has been, which to me kind of suggests Bregman's probably leaving Houston. So from a keeper league perspective, again, what is a likely place that he could end up? And it might be a while, given this Arenado situation, in my opinion, that would kind of save his fantasy value, or maybe even, I don't know, save is a really strong word. I think Bregman's still going to be good. But if he's not going back to Houston, because I think we'd all agree that's where we want him to end up, where's a good soft landing spot that's realistic for Alex Bregman?
I mean, you want it to be somewhere with a nice short left field wall, right? Because that's, from a fantasy perspective, that's where he derives his value. And his value is going to drop a lot if he doesn't have that target. I mean, you know, Boston has a short distance to the left field wall. That's not the same. It's not the same as the Crawford boxes, right? Like,
no.
You can get some, you can definitely get some cheapies over the monster, but it's a different kind of cheapie.
And you gotta get it up.
What?
You gotta hit the ball straight up.
Right. It's not Bregman's, it's not the kind of cheapie that Bregman is used to. I don't know. I don't know. I'm looking at, you know, right-handed home run park factors on Savant right now. And like, here are the top ones in baseball. Dodger Stadium. Now, I don't think the Dodgers are in on him, but it's the Dodgers, so who knows? But no, I don't think that's realistic. I think Yankee Stadium, they're the second best park factor for right-handed power. It's not super deep. It's an interesting one.
They have a need.
And they have a need for bats, and they could use a third baseman. And because they were using Jazz at third at the end of the year, right?
Yes.
But he can move back to second. He can move back to the outfield. Like he's got some flexibility that would allow them to make room. Great American Ballpark. I don't see him going to the Reds. Globe Life Field, I don't see him going to the Rangers. I think, you know, they've got Young coming back. I think that's still what their plan is at third base. Coors Field, I was going to say no, but like they signed Bryant, so who knows? Maybe they'll offer, like, in some ways, offering Bregman an insane amount of money might be right up the Rockies' alley, but Bregman is probably going to get a pretty, you know, $150 to $200 million anyways. And I don't think the Rockies will go up to like the $250 million they might need to go to convince him to play for them. So I don't think that's realistic. And so as I keep sort of scrolling down this list of parks that would be good fits for him, Yankee Stadium stands out. And then the next one that sort of shows up here that makes maybe, I don't know, the next one that I could point at and say, hey, it's been a pretty good, better than you would expect anyways, in terms of right-handed power, is Petco, but I don't know how you make that work with Machado and Bogarts. Like, I guess you have to have Bogarts or Machado at short and the other one at third. I suppose you could try to make one of them a DH or something, or I don't know. Yeah, Yankee Stadium is the Bregman landing spot that from a fantasy perspective stands out.
Yeah, I think a couple things there. Like if he, I would agree with Yankee Stadium, especially from a lineup context as well. It wouldn't be, you know, that much of a downgrade, if a downgrade at all, depending on who they end up with from Houston, which is also an important part of the conversation here. It's not just the park. He plays for a great lineup. If he went to the Red Sox, the power, could he still hit 20 homers? I think he could. And Boston's also a great park for BABIP, so we might see some of those other numbers that have trailed off for Bregman a little bit. Are not necessarily trailed off. We might see his numbers stay the same, which is part of the conversation here. It's like, what would salvage his fantasy value? There's been some rumors about the Mariners, which obviously we wouldn't want to see. But I was listening to an interview with Jerry DePoto, and he actually really likes Dylan Moore. And I'm not saying that, especially for someone as drastic or someone as likely to make moves as Jerry DePoto, that like having Dylan Moore prevents you from getting Alex Bregman. But to an outsider, it might not be as much of a need as it actually is. So if you're worried about your Bregman shares going to Seattle, I think there's a decent chance they need offensive help, but you know, it might not happen. And the other place that stood out for me, Chad, maybe not San Diego, but Toronto, right? You know, I started this show as like Toronto's kind of, it feels like they're the Giants of the American League, right? Bridesmaid, not the bride. And the Giants had to go out and maybe give a little tiny bit more to Adames to make sure they get him. I could see the Blue Jays kind of giving a little tiny bit more to Alex Bregman to make sure he goes there. You know, right now, Roster Resource has Ernie Clement at third base. And as solid as Clement was for stretches last year for Toronto, he's 29 years old. I don't think they view him as a part of their long-term plan. And if they decide, you know what, we're not trading Vlad, we're going to continue to push, we're going to go for this thing, we're going to try to extend Vlad, one way to, you know, make that an easier conversation with your star player would be to bring in a massive piece like Alex Bregman to supplement the lineup. So and Toronto's not that bad for right-handed power. They're, you know, top 10 in parks for right-handed power over the last 3 years. So that could be a decent landing spot for Bregman.
Yeah, it's not a bad one. That makes a lot of sense. I think at the end of the day, the reality is like, I'm going to have a hard time feeling good about Bregman almost no matter where he goes, because he's just so well suited to that one park. I mean, if you look at, you know, he hit 26 home runs last year. If you look at that Baseball Savant expected home runs by park, that expected home run was 31 in Houston. Now, the reason that's higher than his actual is because this is expected assumes every game was played there. So, yeah, that's how he gets to 31 there. It'd also be 31 in Philadelphia, which isn't going to happen. It'd be 36 in Cincinnati, which isn't going to happen. It'd be 31 in Colorado, which I don't think is going to happen. Everything else is below 30. The White Sox, which are also not going to happen, is 32. And there's a lot of parks that are, you know, 19 for the Marlins, 19 for Pittsburgh, 24 for San Francisco, 13 for Baltimore. Even Yankee Stadium was down to 25 from the 31 it would have been in Houston. There's just not a lot of great landing spots for him. That make me feel good. So yeah,
I agree. And I also don't want folks to think that there's no chance he goes back to Houston, right? I mean, they don't have a lot of needs except at the corners, which happens to be where Bregman plays. So could he still end up there if they decide to really pay up for him? I think he could. Right now, Roster Resource has Shea Whitcomb as their starting third baseman. I don't think that's going to happen. And at first base, they have John Singleton. So maybe they're a threat for a name that we didn't get to today, which is Pete Alonso, who I'm sure when he does sign, will break down. But I wouldn't rule Houston out. It's just, I agree, it's not looking super great if he does not go back to Houston. So, Chad, before we wrap up here, are there any other names that you wanted to kick around available free agents?
I mean, there's a handful of other guys that I think are going to be interesting, right? You mentioned Alonso. We very briefly talked about the fact that Jack Flaherty is out there. Christian Walker is sort of an interesting guy, and I'm curious where he lands. But the other guy that I'm sort of very interested in, because he started to show some more again at the end of last year, is Gleyber Torres. And I think he strikes me as the kind of player who, like, there's just been so much smoke around him in New York, or like, he was so good, and then he wasn't doing enough, and is he really a second baseman, and blah, 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 blah. And I think he's going to get a decent long-term-ish contract, like a 3 or 4 year kind of deal that gives him some stability. And I think, like, I'm just intrigued to see what his 2025 season looks like. I'm sort of in on Gleyber Torres, I think.
Interesting. Yeah. When we talk about Gleyber Torres, if folks don't remember, we're talking about he was for a period of time the number one prospect in baseball, which I'm not suggesting he's still going to reach. I mean, MLB trade rumors projecting him to get a 2-year, $36 million contract. Clearly, teams don't view him that way anymore. But this was once a guy with a lot of upside who's put forward really good MLB or fantasy relevant MLB seasons. So there is some life in that bat. I hate where MLB trade rumors projects him to go. Two suggested the Royals, two suggested the Mariners. I wouldn't love either of those fits, particularly from a power perspective. With that said, the Royals offense put up some numbers. So if Torres found himself in the top third of that lineup, that could be pretty fun. But he's definitely an interesting one. So Chad, let's end with something fun. Who's one realistic target that you're hoping the Guardians sign before our next episode?
Oh, goodness. A realistic target I am hoping the Guardians sign. I haven't heard this. I think he's most likely to just go back where he was last year. But the Fangraphs crowdsource numbers for Sean Manaea are 3 years, $60 million. And the Guardians need pitching. I would be very happy to put 3 years and $60 million into Manaea. It's not my money. Easy to say.
Yeah. Fair enough. For me, it's obvious I want Juan Soto, but if the Red Sox are serious about spending, and I don't find it to be likely because they got burned by the Price contract, you could make the case. They got easily make the case. They got burned by the Sale contract, even though they got a World Series out of them. I would still like to see them say, all right, you know what? We didn't get Juan Soto. Let's do everything we can to get Corbin Burns, because the rotation is frankly bad. The numbers from last year are misleading. I think they have excellent pitch coaching and strategy, but at the end of the day, you need talent. And I would love to see them say, let's go get Corbin Burns if we don't get Juan Soto. So I don't know. Just give me one of the two best free agents available and I'll be pretty happy.
That's it. That's all you need.
Yeah, that's all I want. One of the two. I don't need both. Anyway, folks, thanks for listening, and we'll be next time we chat in 2 weeks. I bet a lot of these names have signed, so we should have a much more exciting episode. See you later.